for new power in art, not by a search for beauty, but by a search for the darker side, how to represent the darker side of the human psyche. That occurred especially because of the horror of the First World War. And the expressionistic painters, especially in Germany, showed that in some of their horrific paintings, powerful, wonderful paintings. I mean, they really give you a sense of the reality of war. Prokofiev, the language comes out of that sense of the search by way of the question, how do we affect the human spirit by searching for something other than traditional beauty, you know, the pink flesh and the blue skies, the green trees, the rest. And I'm not disparaging true beauty, but I'm saying this is a different time. This is the 20th century. The 20th century is a century of incredible change, time after time after time. Prokofiev, in this piece, shows us the sense of the grotesqueness of war through dissonance. We're not going to like what we hear, but we're going to be drawn into it. At times, he had a wonderful sense, Prokofiev did as a composer, of bringing up a melody. Sometimes it sounded almost like blues. Another time you'll hear a bugle call. But around these little periods of melodic fragments is a true crunching mercilessness, the relentlessness, the mercilessness of war. This piece also is even stronger through the use of non-symmetry, asymmetrical thinking, rather than 4-4 time or 2-4 time or a waltz 3-4 time. Prokofiev gives us a sense of the nonsense we call war, the baselessness of war, by using something non-symmetrical. This is the last movement of the 7th sonata, the war sonata. It's in 7-8 time with a third beat accent. So there's a regularization because he keeps bringing back the accent, and it creates a sense of symmetry because of the repetition. But it's in 7-8 time, and from the very beginning to the end, there is no break. It's isometric, isorhythmic. It doesn't stop. It is one of the most difficult pieces ever written for the instrument. He wrote it during 1940, before the invasion of Hitler upon Russia, but the war was already on. And Russia and Germany were at loggerheads, certainly, at that particular time. So we have a fear of coming war, perhaps. Horvitz asked Prokofiev for permission to record one of the three war sonatas he had been writing during this time, sonatas 6, 7, and 8. Prokofiev said, do the 7th. So Horvitz premiered it in America, the 7th sonata, at that time, and then recorded it, and it took America by storm. And he sent, as a thank you, a gold-plated pressing to Prokofiev, who lived in Moscow at the time. And Prokofiev sent Horvitz back a telegram that tells us a lot. These are the words in the telegram to Horvitz. My congratulations to the great pianist who found more in my music than I did. Listen to this piece now.
You're listening to WMFO in Medford.
Thank you.
I don't think you're going to find a more perfect example of the relentlessness that is germane to the word war. The grinding, you know, I think of, and I see when I hear something like that, the wheels on a tank going through mud, or soldiers advancing into God knows what. So the anger of the reality of war, the futility of it, certainly given to us by Prokofiev. Also, Horvitz, who at this time was at his height, there's a neurotic edge to Horvitz because of the demons. We've got to talk about him sometime. And the fear he had of failure before an audience, and he never did, it created a kind of edge. He went into psychiatric counseling 4 times. He retired during his life. But he remains one of the great pianists of the 20th century. And the piece you just heard, every note there is written. Every note there has meaning. And the meaning of war and music as a combine couldn't be stronger than in this particular piece. Now, the final piece you're going to hear is with piano and again with Horovitz. It's not that I'm on a Horovitz binge, but he shows this kind of involvement in the passion of the reality of performance to prove a point. I still remember this when Anzus was with me in my own living room, and I looked at him and I said, Leifova, I don't consider you as a great pianist primarily. And he looked at me with a wrinkled nose, and I went further on to explain. I said, I think of you as a great musician who has chosen the piano to prove a point. And he thought about it for 10 seconds, and he said, I like that. So I thought, this is what we're hearing in Horvitz's involvement, the reality of trying to prove a point. Now, let's go to April 25th, 1943, I Am an American Day, during the course of the Second World War. In April of 43, let's see, it's 5 months since Operation Torch took place. An invasion of the Americans for the first time in the Second World War in the European front, called Operation Torch, when we invaded Algeria and Morocco, and eventually created a pincers movement to eradicate Rommel, push him out of Tunisia, and win back North Africa so that Hitler could never get the Suez Canal. At the beginning of this, the leader of Operation Torch was a hitherto unknown general by the name of Eisenhower, his first military attempt in his entire administrative life. So at this time, things were starting to turn around. The Allies were starting to win the war against Hitlerism. That's when Churchill made that famous statement upon the Operation Torch involvement and the success of it, along with the Russians, who were starting to advance toward the west, toward Germany, the long march back to Berlin, ending in the war's end in 1945. When Churchill said, well, perhaps this isn't the beginning of the end, but we may call it perhaps the end of the beginning. So America as a unity, as an entity, was beginning to say, hey, we're going to win this war. So there was a sense of fervor during this particular time. And Vladimir Horovitz and his father-in-law, Arturo Toscanini, arguably the greatest conductor of the 20th century. And a man who was so powerful as a musician, a symphony orchestra was put together for one purpose, for one conductor and one conductor only, and it was Toscanini. It was his own orchestra, and one of the great orchestras in recording history. These two, who both of whom were escapees from fascism, Horovitz from Russian fascism, and of course Toscanini from Italian fascism. They became naturalized citizens. They loved this country. They would do anything for this country. That's how they felt at that time. They were thankful. They decided to put on a concert at Carnegie Hall. The price of admission, war bond. Buy a war bond and you can get in. And at this time, keep in mind, America was realizing that, hey, we're going to win this thing. It was like a giant football game. When the word got out that there was a concert by Horvitz and Toscanini. They only recorded five or six times, and each of the recordings is an historical recording. Toscanini to the orchestra was like Horvitz to the piano. Incredible power. And Toscanini liked Horvitz. Toscanini didn't like very many people. He was a tyrant, but he liked his own son-in-law. Remember, he didn't choose his son-in-law. And so they decided to put on this program. Within 18 hours, the war bonds came flying in. Well, the West Coast, people on the West Coast, knowing they couldn't have a chance in Hades in getting into Carnegie Hall, they did it for the sense of, hey, America's winning. Let's buy war bonds. And only about 2,000 or so people will be able to get in. Within hours, they sold over $11 million worth of war bonds. Think of $11 million in 1943. In 1943, the base price of a house was $3,600 for a house. That was the average base price. Now, cast this against $11 million in 1943. Can you imagine how much $11 million would be today? Can you think about the reality of a better example of the power of music that drew these people together? When Horvitz and Toscanini heard the news, they themselves became electrified by the consequence of what they had chosen to do. $11 million in a matter of hours? So their concert was put on. The audience was electrified. The performers were electrified. The moment was absolutely one of a kind. This is arguably the most electrifying performance done in classical music in recorded history. You'll hear the third movement of the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto. That's the concerto they chose to do. You'll hear the third movement. Listen to the sweep and the passion and the reality of the moment by the world's greatest conductor with arguably the world's best orchestra at the time with one of the most electric pianists. Listen to it. Thank you. so much for what we call victory. You could smell victory in listening to that music. There are other pieces of music I could have chosen give you as examples, but I thought I'd center around the piano. Hopefully you will have enjoyed this. By the way, very quickly, Toscanini, who was a tyrant, I think the greatest insult he gave to his orchestra when someone goofed, he quietly put down his baton, which was just the opposite. He usually would throw the baton at someone and shriek. But he said, in my second life, I shall return as the master of a house of prostitution. And not one of you men will ever get into this house. So I thought perhaps I'd tell you what he said. This is the kind of man he was. A fantastic musician. A man who never used music. Every piece he did during a 75-year career was done by memory. Go figure that one out. Thank you so much. Have a great day, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Les. That was outstanding.
It sure was.
Really, really enjoyed it.
That last bit of music, that reminded me of the 4th of July, except it's like 50 below out.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. We're going to win this game.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. For a minute, I was thinking I was on the beach somewhere, but then I looked out the window.
That's the voice of Mark Hurwitz there. Yeah.
Debbie Downer.
Marky Downer. Yeah. Hitting Boston City restaurants, Boston Restaurant Talk. It's Mark Hurwitz here. He's going to tell us about some latest reviews and industry news, and then you're going to share about 6 songs that you've put together for us as well. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, well, the restaurants first, and not much news going on lately, which is interesting. It's been such a crazy few months, but a little bit of a lull on the news. A couple stories. One is good, one is bad. Good news first. Davio's is planning to open in the old Bobby's Burger Palace place in the Burlington Mall. So Bobby's Burger Palace shut down a few weeks ago, and a lot of people were upset because they... It was a good burger place. I thought the burgers were excellent there. I know it's a small chain and celebrity food guy, but it was good. And but now Davio's, which is a pretty well-respected upscale Italian chain or group, I guess you could call it, they're going to take it over. So that's definitely good. And Burlington continues to get more and more restaurants in, so it's becoming a destination. Bad news, not restaurant, but Martinetti Liquors in Brighton is closing. So that'll end the Martinetti name on the retail end of things. They've been around forever, including a store in the North End that closed a while back. But they're going to focus on wholesale, which I'm glad they're still going to be in business, but you're not going to see their name as far as retail shops anymore. And I think they close next weekend. So that's it for news. As far as reviews, I've been to a few places over the last couple weeks, including a place called Buddy's Union Villa in Easton, which is a roadhouse. I mean, Easton's a nice town. You wouldn't think of a little down and dirty roadhouse there, but Buddy's is a total roadhouse. Locals go there. No one else knows about it. And they have bar pizza because it's South Boston. Everyone has bar pizza in South Boston. But when they're on, that is some of the best bar pizza you'll get anywhere in the South Shore. And it's recommended you get the pizza with burnt ends, which is for 50 cents extra. You can have them burn the outer edge of the crust, which kind of has a combination of dough and tomato paste and cheese, and it just turns kind of blackish brown, and it's just so good. One other place lately that we went to was the Kelly Square Pub in East Boston, which, have you been there, Mike?
I haven't, but I want to go.
I think we should go there. It's great. It's kind of like, a little like Santarpio's, but more of a full restaurant, and it's close to Santarpio's. And some people think their pizza is better than Santarpio's, which...
Blasphemy.
I know. When people tell me that, I say, you should watch yourself, but then I realize that... It's pretty close. I mean, the pizza there is incredible, and they also have Sicilian pizza, which is absolutely outstanding. So that's about it. Hit a couple other places of late, but those are the two big ones. And again, not much news going on, so I guess that's a good thing because a lot of the news has been bad of late for restaurants.
All right.
So I guess we're going to move into music now.
Let's go on to the 6 song set that you put together.
All right, so just a quick explanation. I have been doing what a lot of people have been doing lately is reading Bruce Springsteen's biography, which is fascinating. He's a great writer. He wrote it himself. No real ghostwriter to speak of. I'm sure he had a little help, but excellent writer, and talks about, you know, the music and his life, and he's been through a lot. And he talks in the book a lot about influences, and it's amazing the range of influences that Bruce has. You know, everything from soul music to psychedelia to punk, country, folk, you name it. So this set has a few songs that kind of cover that whole range, and you may have heard, I know you've heard at least one of these, but some of these songs you might not know of. And then we're going to end with a Bruce song, which it'll be interesting because listen to the song before the Bruce song and then the song that Bruce does, and well, you'll see. It's very interesting.
Okay, this is WMFO in Medford.
Yeah. by the side of the track when the train goes by. The wind and rain will catch you, you will sigh deep in your heart. Farewell, you walking shoes.
'cause I feel a little mad. But don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, I seem to be bad. Baby, sometimes I'm so carefree with a joy that's hard to hide. And sometimes it seems that all I have to do is worry, and then you're bound to see my other side. Understood. If I seem edgy, I want you to know that I never mean to take it out on you. Life has its problems, and I get my share, and that's one thing I never mean to do, 'cause I love you. Oh, 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 baby, don't you know I'm human? I have thoughts like any other one. Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some foolish thing, some little sinful thing I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Yes, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Girl, what's up tonight? what's up? This is Gwen from No Doubt, speaking for Rad. You think you can drive properly after you've had a few drinks? I don't think so. Give up the keys. Choose a designated driver. Music lives, so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
And us here at WMFO Medford, 10:43 in the morning. Mike here with Mark and Les Hurwitz. Hey, Mark, you want to tell us a little bit about those six songs? A little bit more?
Sure,
any more commentary?
Thing. Well, yeah, like I said earlier, Bruce Springsteen, whose biography is great, by the way, definitely pick it up if you can. He was influenced by so many singers, bands, musical acts, a lot of them from the 60s. And actually, all the songs you just heard now, except for Springsteen's, were from the 60s. And a wide range of music. We started out with Goodnight Baby by Sam and Dave. And Bruce just idolized Sam more. His voice is just pure voice. I think Dave Marsh, a music critic, he said Sam Moore has he's the greatest living soul singer right now, which is pretty true. I mean, it's tough to get any better. And Bruce said that, you know, he wasn't gifted with a great voice like Sam Moore, so he had to pour his heart into it. So he said even though he knew he didn't, you know, he wasn't the greatest singer in the world, he learned a lot from people like Sam Moore, just like going 110% with, you know, trying to be the best he could. So,
well, that was a fascinating six songs there. Really, really enjoyed that.
It was.
That was great.
After that was,
oops.
Oh.
Just forget that happened.
Okay. So, after Sam and Dave, what was that?
Well, that was the next song that's coming up.
Oh, okay. Next song was Omaha by Moby Grape, which is completely different from Sam and Dave. Kind of a psychedelic band from the late 60s. But the thing is, they had a wall of sound, which Bruce Springsteen loved. And growing up, Bruce Springsteen's one of his favorite bands was Moby Grape. So he learned a lot from this band, even though they were kind of not really the same type of music as Bruce. But Bruce now in concert, he does that song. That was Omaha, and he does that song a lot in concert because he just loves the wall of sound with the guitars. Kind of, you know, that Stax Volt wall of sound, but with more psychedelia. After that was Van Morrison, Come Running, which is off
Moondance.
It's an amazing song.
Yeah.
And that was technically, I guess you could say it was 1970, but it was written in the 60s, like late 69. And you could tell the horns in the background of that song, you know, Bruce totally into the horns, especially with Clarence Clemons. So Bruce learned a lot from Van Morrison, especially the early stuff, the first two albums. After that was Gary U.S. Bond's Quarter to Three, which is, I think, from 1961. And out of all of these, I think that Bruce learned the most, or he was influenced most by Gary U.S. Bond's, because you listen to that song and you feel like it's a song from the river by Bruce Springsteen. You know, just that New Jersey party sound, that beach sound. And, you know, Gary U.S. Bond's and Bruce, they've done a lot and have worked together. So definitely a connection there. And then after that was Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood by the Animals, which we all know that song from the 60s. And just the funny thing about that is, combining that with Badlands, is that Bruce stole the riff from Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood to use for Badlands. And he admits he stole it. He said he kind of borrowed it. And I think Eric Burdon and the Animals are okay with that. But Bruce was very much influenced by the Animals growing up. And between that and the punk sound, because the Animals were kind of one of the first bands that influenced punk, during Darkness on the Edge of Town, Bruce was totally into the punk music and, you know, the Animals and Who, which were the forerunners of punk. So it brought about one of the greatest albums ever, including that song, Badlands. And that's about it.
It was wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Hurwitz.
Thank you.
All right. We got a couple more minutes until 11 a.m. when Something About the Women comes in. And I know Liz is in the building, so she'll be here with you in a couple. But let me squeeze in this last set. Some new noise will start it off, and then I'll try and squeeze in a couple requests that you guys put down as well. First of all, the new noise is brand new from Chris Cornell. He's got a new single. I guess he's working on a new album coming out, and this one is great. It is called The Promise here at WMFO Medford.
If I have nothing to my name but photographs of you written on your face. The strength that shines behind your eyes, the hope and light that will never die.
Hey, it's WMFO in Medford. How you doing? It's Mike on the mic. I want to thank the Hurwitz brothers here. Mark,
what are you
and Les,
laughing about?
Because I call you brothers and you're just not. You're exactly. Father and son. We all know that.
Hey, you know, Mark you Schultz. We all know Mark Schultz.
Yeah, we do.
And I think it was him on Facebook. I think he said he's the one who said that was like the most freeform music he's heard in a long time.
Yeah, it was pretty
crazy. We went from classical to soul to rock to whatever.
Guilty as charged.
Yep.
All right, so that last set was a quick one. Started with new Chris Cornell, called The Promise. Then a request for our Queenie friend, Teresa Thornton. She wanted to hear Aretha Franklin, Rock Steady. And then some Fleetwood Mac for Tom. Whoa, all the way out in Worcester. Thank you, Tom. And we're going to end with a request here before Liz comes up for something about the women. This is, of course, well, you'll know when I do this. It's the Stones. It's Gimme Shelter. I think it was Mike Costa, Mike Linsky. It was a Mike.
It was a Mike. It wasn't you, though.
No, it wasn't me. All right, thank you, everybody. I'll be back next week, next Saturday at 9 a.m. This is WMFO, Medford.